Good afternoon. Welcome to the Eco News Report. This week, your hosts are from the North Coast Environmental Center, Bella Waters, Admin and Development Director, and Larry Glass, Executive Director. The Eco News Report is an exclusive feature of KHSU brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, Eco News. Don't forget you can find this show and other KHSU public affairs shows on the audio archives page at khsu.org. Today we'll be providing brief snippets of current news that pertain to various environmental topics, such as the proposed Cherry Heights Casino and proposed East-West Train, breaking news from Epic, plastic particles carried by mosquitoes, and current climate change news. All right, Larry, what do you have for us first?
Well, I think everybody that lives here on the North Coast has fallen in love at some point or other with Trinidad. Everybody loves Trinidad. You like to spend time going up there with your family or your friends and play on the beach or hike out on the head or, you know, have a picnic there or whatever. And a lot of people have an emotional attachment to it. So the news that just came public here in the last few weeks of the plan to build a giant 100-room, six-story hotel.
No, I must have heard that wrong.
Right along Scenic Drive in Trinidad has really grabbed people's attention, certainly grabbed mine. Particularly because this structure will be so big that you would be able to see it even from Eureka on a clear day.
How many stories is it?
Six stories. And we can't show the artist rendering over the phone, but if you go to our website, we have the artist rendering there that you can sort of see how big we're talking about. You'll be able to see it for a long way away, and particularly because the west side is all windows, late in the afternoon when the sun's hitting that, it will light it up like a beacon. And so, like I said, you'll be able to see that way down the coast.
Right.
As far away as you can usually see Trinidad Head, you'll probably be able to see this. So that it's a big deal. And not only that, but it also includes a new interchange on 101.
Oh, they've been trying to do that for a few years.
Well, I'd heard rumblings of that, but, you know, knowing how difficult it is to get the kind of permitting I would think that would be necessary for that, I never really took it serious. But now that this proposal has come forward and they've hired, you know, some people who are pretty serious about this. So the next step is for them to release an environmental assessment. Now, as of a couple of days ago, it wasn't out, but it's supposed to be out any day. It could have come out yesterday or today, and I don't know about it. But any day now, the environmental assessment will be out, and there will be a comment period on that. The lead agency on this is the Bureau of Indian Affairs, because this is a reservation or a tribal group that's wanting to do this on what is considered their sovereign land. So BIA will be the lead agency in taking a look at this. And normally, this document would be available for view from, you know, lots of different agencies, City of Trinidad, Cal Fire, County of Humboldt, California Coastal Commission. So hopefully we'll get people to respond to that. Now, if you're interested in this evening in Trinidad at the town hall from 6 to 9 p.m., they're having a public meeting. And when I say they, the Humboldt Alliance for Responsible Planning, also known as HARP, we'll be having a public information meeting about all of this. And so if you are concerned like I am, then you'll want to be at this meeting and get involved and have a say about what transpires here.
Right. And that's tonight, Thursday, September 27th.
Right. And, you know, just some other thoughts before we leave this topic is that, you know, the town of Trinidad gets its water from Luffenholz Creek. And, you know, I'm not sure that
they'd be able to handle a 100-room
hotel sucking water out of Luffenholz Creek is sustainable at all.
And I think there's plans for a pool as well in that.
Now, the rancheria has in existence already 100,000-gallon tank, but from what I understand, that wouldn't be nearly enough. They would have to come up with something way beyond that. So lots of issues to be concerned about, the noise, the light pollution, all of those sorts of things are going to be issues, and traffic.
Right. Well, now, if I recall, everyone on Trinidad is on septic, so there's no wastewater facilities up there. So that's another situation they'd have to figure out what to do with all the wastewater from the casino.
Boy, and you're right about that.
Right.
There'd almost have to be a regular visit from the septic services all the time, coming and pumping their holding tanks out.
Yeah.
Lots of things to be concerned about here.
Mm-hmm. Well, and our next story is pretty concerning as well.
So next up here is the Planning Commission has approved Mercer Fraser's asphalt plant right near Big Lagoon.
Man.
And the hits just keep coming.
Right.
Humboldt County Planning Commission has approved plans for the continued operation of an asphalt plant less than half a mile from the iconic Big Lagoon, despite objections that all the relevant data about the plant has not yet been received, and over requests to postpone the decision until next month. The current planning commission that we've got, this is kind of the classic move for them.
Mm-hmm.
Usually with Noah Levy, Mike Wilson's appointee, is the only dissenting vote, and that was the case this time. The plant is operated on land that's owned by Green Diamond, and they apparently had a permit before this, but I don't think anybody in the public knew anything about it. I think this was a big sort of well-kept secret that people didn't realize that this was going on.
Right, and they've been operating on an expired permit for the last few months.
Yeah, and they're also, in classic Mercer Fraser style, operating within the 100-year floodplain.
Oh,
sound familiar?
It does sound familiar. Yeah. Yep, Mad River.
We're referring to the Mad River, where they were wanting to have a cannabis extraction facility there.
Mm-hmm.
Right within the floodplain, right next to the Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District. So this seems to be a regular thing with Mercer Fraser to locate operations on sensitive ground. Humboldt Baykeeper has been following this closely, and Humboldt Baykeeper's director, Jennifer Call, thought it would be prudent to know just what chemicals might be contaminating the site. And in mid-August, she asked the planning department for further information. She followed her initial inquiries with a California Public Records Act request and was promised the information by September 24th, 4 days after the commission actually met and made their decision. For that reason, she asked the commission to postpone the hearing until after the requested information had been received. Call also noted that the project area was home to several endangered species, including coho and Chinook salmon and cutthroat trout. She was concerned about possible flood risks and hazardous materials that might exist on the site. And Jennifer said, "We've been asking for this info on this permit site since early August, including a public act request filed on August 29th. Not only have we yet to receive any info, but we weren't even informed that this hearing had been scheduled. This was an exceptionally poor job done by county staff. Fortunately, the County Planning Commission's approval of this permit is appealable to the Coastal Commission. So we're looking into pursuing an appeal."
All right.
And the Coastal Commission does not require that the Baykeeper first appeal to the Board of Supervisors. And that's a very expensive process. So that's good news for Baykeeper being able to put up the fight without having to pay the expensive tariff that the county requires when you appeal one of their decisions. So,
right. Thank you,
also, 5th District Supervisor-elect Steve Madrone spoke from the audience and expressed his concerns about the location of the project within the floodplain and urged the commission to find a better location and that they should postpone the hearing until all the relevant information was available. So at least we have a supervisor-elect now for that district that's willing to stand up and speak out on some of these environmental issues. So glad to see he was there and glad to see he spoke out.
Right. Yeah. Well, do you have some good news?
Yeah, actually, we have some very good news. This is from our friends at Epic, Tom Wheeler and the folks over there. A judge ruled today in the U.S. District Court for the Northern, I guess this was yesterday, but a few days ago, right. Whatever, Northern District of California, that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service must reconsider their denial of endangered species protection for the Pacific fisher.
That's great
I know
news.
All of us that work in forest issues were just stunned when U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service decided not to pursue it any further. Because meeting with all their staff on the ground all the time in the forest, they were always talking about it matter-of-factly, like, oh yeah, when the protections for the fisher come along after it's declared a threatened and endangered species, this will be the restraints that you have here. And then all of a sudden, that all just went away. So the efforts to gain protection from the fisher now span decades. In the 2000s, EPIC, Center for Biological Diversity, Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center and Sierra Forest Legacy petitioned to list the fisher under the Federal Endangered Species Act. The groups were represented by Earth Justice. Today's decision that the judge emphasized that the service downplayed the threat to fishers from rodent poisons in determining that federal protection was not warranted. And anybody who's been to a Murad Gabriel presentation knows that the fisher has been the worst recipient of all of the rodenticides being used by the illegal cannabis grows and even some legal ones out there in the forest. And so the fisher's taken it on the chin. So this is good news that the Fish and Wildlife Service will be forced to reconsider their decision not to pursue this status for the fisher. So hooray.
Hooray. Thanks, Epic, for that update. In terms of
you have some news about our Coastal Cleanup Day.
I do, yes. So Coastal Cleanup Day was on September 15th, and the NEC coordinated Humboldt County's Coastal Cleanup Day. And with about 3/4 of the Coastal Cleanup Day data reported, the totals stand at about 12,000 pounds. That's over 6 tons of debris were picked up from our oceans, beaches, and waterways. Over 700 volunteers participated. We're expecting about 1,000 when the last 1/4 of the totals come in. And over 70 miles of coastline were cleaned. So it's amazing to hear that much debris was removed from our beaches. So thanks all who came out to help with that effort.
So now here's an issue that there was an article about in the Lost Coast Outpost here just recently, but we need to mention it on Eco News Reports because it's an issue that I have been closely following for the last decade or so, and that is this crazy concept of building an east-west railroad. Now, many of you probably read Ryan Burns's article. We won't delve into that too much, but it covers the financial aspect of this $10 billion project that they're considering. But some interesting new information that's come out from the various meetings that I've attended recently and from that article is that they're talking now about a double track system. So the earlier versions of this East-West Railroad idea were just a single track.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're talking about a double track. So we're looking at potentially 150-foot wide clear cut.
Right.
From here to near Red Bluff. Gerber is near Red Bluff. So that would be very destructive and impossible to maintain without... I mean, very expensive
right.
to maintain. It would be very environmentally destructive. It would be a barrier to wildlife at a certain point. They're portraying this as being a green project. And the way they get away with that is that they claim they're going to use carbon fiber built, hydrogen powered locomotion.
Do those exist?
They don't even exist. There's a prototype, apparently, that's hauling a few passengers in Europe somewhere. But for hauling freight, it's a whole nother story.
Definitely.
And it would be dimensions have to be dimensions more powerful to haul a mile-long line of freight cars, you know, so...
Yeah, can't say anything more about
that. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's stunning. But it's actually, what's important for local people to know is this actually has a political side to it, because now this issue has become a factor in at least two different races locally. The Eureka City Council race, where we have a candidate, Anthony Manitova, who is a big champion of the East-West Railroad. And then we have a candidate for the Harbor District, Marion Brady, who's currently on the Eureka City Council, running for the Harbor District against Richard Marks. And she's made this, building this, her top campaign issue. So there's a chance for the public, I guess, to weigh in on this. If they think it's such a great idea, they'll be able to... to show their support.
That's right.
Or conversely, be able to show they think it's completely crazy.
Well, and speaking about the upcoming election, there's a Eureka Candidate Forum coming up on Sunday, September 30th from 6 to 8, and then also Monday, October 1st from 6 to 8 at the Labor Temple, which is at 840 E Street in Eureka. And Sunday, I believe, is all of the candidates for city council, and Monday will be a couple city council and then the mayoral candidates.
Yeah, it's Ward 1 and Ward 3 on Sunday, and Ward 5 and the mayor candidates on Monday. So it starts at 6. We cooperate. The NEC is part of this coalition of groups putting this on. It's Humboldt Healthcare for All, AHA, NAACP, AFL-CIO, Cooperation Humboldt, North Coast People's Alliance, and as I said, the NEC, Central del Pueblo, and Move to Amend are the organizations that are participating in this. Each of the organizations will be asking questions. I'll be asking one for the NEC at both of these events. So the one we did for the supervisors was very informative. I would urge the public that lives in Eureka that's interested, or if you don't live in Eureka and you're still interested in the issues, to show up for this event. It's very informative.
Mm-hmm. Speaking about city councils, recently the Arcata City Council talked about banning single-use plastics in Arcata. They are going to continue talking about that, and they're assembling a zero-waste task force, which will help develop strategies for implementation of the city's zero-waste action plan and engage the public around the goal of zero waste. Madison Peters, the NEC's Coastal Programs Coordinator, has said that her work has given her a firsthand view of what single-use addiction looks like. Peters said during coastal cleanups, volunteers pick up discarded wrappers, plastic lids with straws stuck in them, polystyrene, and other trash. She carries reusable utensils with her and encourages others to do the same. Council member Brett Watson said of the ban he supports it 100% and that there's a need to reduce the amount of waste and recycled produced, especially in light of the upcoming recycling processing fee. If you haven't heard about the fee, it's going to be coming soon. There is a public hearing on the fee increase set for November 7th, and it is, I don't have the amounts, but we're looking at it having to increase the fee for recycling because the city used to receive $8 per ton of curbside material, but now is going to have to pay $69.56 per ton because the recycling just is not being accepted.
And this is something we reported about previously, which is China has basically decided to stop taking all of our recyclables.
Right.
So oddly, scientists have come up with a study that show that the very plastics that we're concerned with, after they start breaking down and become small particles, can actually wind up in mosquitoes and their larvae. And so then they can carry that and spread that through the environment, and along with, I guess, earthworms and mussels, and eventually eat these small, and this is, you know, almost microscopic size little beads of plastic. Mm-hmm. And so they're getting into the food stream, into the whole rest of the environment. So anyways, very concerning.
Very concerning, yep.
So forestry stuff, there was a study that just was released here where more than 200 scientists have come out with a paper that is debunking the concept of thinning in the forest to reduce wildfire risk. In fact, this study that comes from, well, it's a group of scientists, they don't have a name, but some of the scientists involved are from the Geos Institute. And then another group of scientists that are predominantly forest ecologists also came out with a study that shows that post-fire salvage is also creating higher fire risk as well. So these popular concepts that people have that, oh, we go out and thin the forest, we're reducing fire danger. No, according to these scientists, and I'd have to say according to my personal observations, that's not the case. Especially when you have areas that have lots of small trees, like plantations, where they're trying to reforest an area that they've clear cut or that's been burned over, and you have closely planted trees together, those areas just recently in the Carr Fire, in the Delta Fire, those carried that fire. I mean, they got into those plantations. These were Sierra Pacific Industries plantations around the north side, northeast side of Trinity Lake. And that just, those just all torched up. I mean, you know, it's not, that is not making the landscape
right.
fire safe.
Mm-hmm.
And there needs to be a return to, you know, paying more attention to the way the natural processes work. You know, the indigenous people that lived here before all of us showed up used to routinely have fires here for their benefit. And it kept there from being so many big, you know, conflagrations like the Carr Fire, you know,
mm-hmm.
because there was routinely small fires that were used to create a wildlife habitat and to enhance the bear grass to grow and various things that were utilized from that. It was a good balance, and we need to figure out some way to get close back to that again.
Right.
Anyways, that's what that study's about. More Roundup news on the Roundup, and that is that it turns out that Roundup, which is the most used pesticide ever, damages the good bacteria in honeybees' guts.
Oh.
So apparently it's having an effect on honeybees and causing an acceleration of the decline of honeybees around the world. And also another study in China came out and shows that it not only does that, but it makes their larva grew more slowly and died more often when exposed to glyphosate. And adults in the field show cognitive capabilities were in decline, and they were having trouble finding the hive. So,
bad news all around that Roundup.
Okay, a couple of quickies here before our half hour's up. There was a groundbreaking study about Hurricane Florence, and they published this study right before the hurricane hit, so we know that their math was good because they predicted ahead of time a 50% more rain than usual would fall from this. So pretty interesting study. That story comes to us from Grist. The researchers are from Stony Brook University in New York and Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory in California. And they published their findings just 2 days before the storm made landfall. So interesting study. They predicted that, and clearly they're using climate change as part of their prediction.
Right.
Another thing I want to bring to your attention is that thawing Arctic lakes are bubbling with methane, amplifying global warming. This one was reported in the Journal of Nature Communications. Methane is 30 more times potent at trapping heat than carbon dioxide and has been frozen for potentially thousands of years, and its sudden release could significantly impact the climate by the end of the century. So that's happening right now in the Arctic as it continues to warm up.
Right.
And I think a direct result of, and this is just my opinion, but a direct result of the climate change is happening was the the same time as Florence in the Western Pacific was Super Typhoon Magnehunk. I can't pronounce it. But anyways, also called Omapong in the Philippines. They name all the typhoons for themselves, so they don't go by the international name. But anyways, it was a super typhoon equivalent to a Category 5 hurricane with 175-mile-an-hour winds when it hit the Philippines. This was at the same time as Florence. Now, today, a brand new super typhoon has formed right where this last one just formed. Oh. It fortunately is not heading to the Philippines, but is curving north and might make it all the way to Japan. I doubt it'll still be a super typhoon when it gets that far north. But still, to have one just 2 weeks later form in the exact same spot, another super typhoon, Category 5, with 175-mile-an-hour winds, you gotta look at climate change.
Definitely, yep.
So one last thing here, and this is a little bit of good news, or at least people locally are paying attention. Humboldt County has pledged to create a plan for realigning its carbon emissions and will strive for 100% renewably sourced electricity by 2025. A resolution to that effect was unanimously approved at the September 11th board meeting of the supervisors, advanced by our supervisor here in Arcata, Mike Wilson. The resolution also declares the county's support for the International Paris Agreement, which the U.S. has withdrawn from. Mike Wilson said the timing of the resolution is appropriate, as Global Climate Action Summit in San Francisco started the day after the meeting, and he was there on behalf of the county. Cities and counties are working on an overall push to control the increase of average global temperature and to keep it below 2 degrees Celsius. Wilson said that Humboldt County has the potential to be a game changer in this. He added that residents of the region are feeling effects on all sides with wildfires, sea level rise, and ocean acidification.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks, Mike.
Yep, thanks, Mike. Okay, well, this has been the Eco News Report with Bella Waters and Larry Glass, and we've been your hosts for the past half hour. You can find more information about the issues we've discussed on the NEC website at www.yournec.org. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the public affairs page on the KHSU website at khsu.org, where these programs are archived for 2 weeks after they air. Previous shows are posted on the North Coast Environmental Center's website at yournec.org. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call KHSU's listener comment line at 826-6089. The Eco News Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks to Fred McLaughlin for engineering. Join us again for the Eco News Report.